We present Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey in The Nine Tailors by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted for radio by Alistair Beaton. With Peter Jones as Bunter, Philip Latham as the Reverend Theodore Venables, Timothy Bateson as Superintendent Blundell, and Stephen Greif as Nobby Cranton. Episode 5, A Question of Identity.
There was a great wind blowing over the fen, and immense white clouds sailing fast in the wide blue dome of the sky, as Lord Peter Wimsey and Superintendent Blundell walked thoughtfully through the churchyard at Fenchurch St. Paul. Lord Peter's visit to France had increased his suspicions that Nobby Cranton was the murderer of the man found buried in the churchyard. If this theory was correct, then the body was that of Jean Le Gros, who must have travelled from France around New Year in order to meet up with Cranton and divide the spoils of a robbery carried out in Fenchurch St. Paul more than 10 years before. The motive for such a murder was clear. Nobby Cranton preferred not to share out the takings with anybody else. But a large number of questions remained unanswered. Not least, how Jean Le Gros came to know about the jewels and to find out how to contact Nobby Cranton. And was Nobby Cranton really the sort of man to commit a brutal murder? Wimsey confided his thoughts to the superintendent.
Well, my lord, if that's so it is, we've got to find Cranton. But I wouldn't have thought Nobby Cranton was the man for that sort of job. And you know, my lord, that it's very rare for one of them sort of smart burglars to go off the rails and take to violence, far less murder. Still, we got to find him, that's clear. If he's alive, he's lying uncommon low.
Found anything interesting today, Blundell? You have the look of a man on the hunt for clues.
Not really, my lord. I just thought I'd look round the churchyard in case of something we might have missed. But all I found up till now is nettles. They'll start thinking I turned as potty peak.
Yes, but it's that chap, Will Thoday, who worries me. I can't make him out at all, can you?
Well, I'll swear he knows something. But what can he know? It's as certain as anything can be that he was sick in bed when it all happened. Now, there's one other person might know something, and that's James Thoday, Will's brother. Look here, my lord, here's a queer thing. James Thoday left the village on January 4th early in the morning to join his ship. He was seen to go all right, the station master saw him, but he never got to Hull that day. They'd been onto the shipping line he works for, and they say they had a wire from him to say he'd be delayed. Had some story been taken suddenly ill, and they say he looked ill enough when he did arrive. I've told them to get in touch with him as quick as they can.
Where was the wire sent from?
London, from a post office near Liverpool Street.
He might have picked up influenza from his brother.
So he might. Still, he was fit to sail the next day, and it looks funny, don't you think? He'd have had plenty of time to go up to London and come down here again. He might have come part of the way by train and the rest by car or motorbike.
You think he was in with Will over the thing? Yes,
well,
I see. Will Thoday is in a conspiracy with Le Gros to get the emeralds, is that it? He then gets flu and can't do the job himself, so he arranges with brother Jim to do it for him. Then Jim meets Le Gros, kills him, buries him, and vamooses with the emeralds to Hong Kong. Well, that would explain one thing, and that's why those infernal stones haven't been put on the European market. Still, it was easier when we put it all onto Cranton, what? I mean, with his contacts in London, Cranton could easily have arranged false papers for Le Gros. But you can't imagine that Will Thoday produced a false passport and all that. How would a fellow like that know how to set about it?
But there's the £200 that Will had on him when he was taken ill at New Year.
So there was. Ah, but that was after Le Gros set out.
And when Le Gros was killed, the money was returned to the bank.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. He gave me permission to go over his bank account. No suspicious withdrawals of money up to that £200 on December 31st, and that was paid in again in January, as soon as he was able to get about. He said the money was for purchasing a piece of land, but that he changed his mind. It's true about the land. I checked, and he did consider buying it. All the same, £200, all in £1 notes, and excuse me a moment, my lord.
Gotcha.
All clear off. You'll get yourself in trouble, my lad, hanging round the churchyard and listening to private conversations.
Oh, you needn't choke a fella. Don't choke poor Potty. If you knew what I know.
What do you know?
I seen him. Number 9. I seen him a-talking to Will Thudy in the church. But the tailors was too much for him. Him with the rope, he got him. And he'll get you too, Potty knows.
Who was talking to Will in the church?
Why, him over there. Him in the grave. The black-bearded man. There's 8 in the belfry and 1 in the grave. That makes 9. Him as calls a pail, you won't get him. Oh, no.
I'll see here. You're a clever fellow, Potty. Huh? When did you see Will Thoday talking to the black-bearded man?
It was Monday night, that's when it was. There was cool pork and beans for dinner. That's good, cool pork and beans. Parson, he preached about thankfulness. Be thankful for Christmas, he say. So Potty slips out that night to be thankful again. Oh, you got to go to church, be thankful properly, ain't you, sir? And there was the church door a-standing open. So Potty creeps in, careful like, see, and there's a light in the vestry. Oh, Potty was frightened. Potty hides behind old Batty Thomas, and then Will Thudy comes in.
Are you sure of that, Potty?
Yeah. Potty hears him talking in the vestry. Will Thudy, then he cries out, and he fetches a rope from the chest. Oh, Potty don't want to see no one hanged.
And what did you do then, Potty?
Oh, Potty runs away. He looks in at the vestry window, and there's a black-bearded man a-laying on the floor, and Will a-standing him over him on the floor. Ropes. Potty dreams of ropes. 9 ropes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And this one's 9.
I think you were dreaming all the time, Potty.
Yeah. It were only one of poor Potty's dreams. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And now there's 9. 9 tailors makes a man.
What are we to make of that?
Well, I think he saw something all right. Or how did he know that the rope was gone from the coat chest?
That's true. Unless he were hiding in the churchyard and saw you and me finding the rope.
When do you think the rector preached about thankfulness for Christmas?
Well, that'd be the Sunday after, December 30th. We can easily check up on that with the rector.
Perhaps you should see Will Thoday again.
Perhaps I should. Not that I believe a single word Potty says. Now about Jim Thoday. How does he come into it now?
I don't know, Super, but there is one thing I'm sure of. It was no sailor put those knots into the rope we found in the well. I'll take my oath on that. By the way, have a look at this, will you? Young Hilary Thorpe sent it to me. It's a piece of paper she found in the belfry on the Saturday before Easter Day.
I thought to see the fairies in the field, but I saw only the evil elephants with their black backs. Woe, and how that sight awed me. The elves danced all around in a boat, while I heard voices calling clearly. Minstrels, gold trumpets, harps, and drums. Well, my lord, I don't know what to make of that. Sounds Potty.
I don't think Potty could rise to such heights. I think it may be some form of cryptogram.
Indeed, my lord. I shouldn't care to have to decipher it.
No, quite. It's already shown itself to be far from simple. But I've not yet given up hope of cracking the code.
If there is a code, my lord.
As you say, Blundell. If there is a code. Come in.
Lord Peter.
Ah.
I do hope you're not working yourself to death.
No, no.
I have ventured to bring a little comfort for the inner man.
Oh, thank you.
As these nights of early summer so cheery. And my wife thinks you might like to use this foot muff.
Oh, that's very kind.
Well, our maid Emily should have brought it to you, but sometimes she's as forgetful as I am. There's always a draught under that door. No, allow me.
Thank you.
Slightly moth-eaten, I fear, but still affords protection.
Well, this is most kind of you, Padre. Do give my thanks to Mrs. Venables.
Yes, indeed I will. Now, you must not let me disturb him. Oh, dear me. Now, what's that? Are you pricking out a peal of bells? Oh, no. I see they're letters, not figures. My eyesight is not as good as it was. No, I'm rudely prying into your affairs.
No, not a bit, Padre. Not a bit. Well, it does look rather like a peal, doesn't it? Yes. No, it's still this wretched cipher. Finding that a number of letters formed a multiple of 8, I'd written it out in 8 columns, hoping forlornly that something might come of it. But now you mention it, I suppose one might make a simple sort of cipher out of a set of changes.
How would one do that?
Well, by taking the movements of 1 bell, and write in the letters of your message in the appropriate places, and then fill in up the places of the other bills with, well, any letters you like.
Yes. No, I don't quite...
Well, look, for instance, take a plain course of grandsire doubles. And suppose you want to convey the simple and pious message, come and worship.
Yes, indeed.
Well, you would select one bell to carry the letters of the message. Let us say number five bell. Mm-hmm. Then you would write out your plain course, and wherever number five came, you would put one letter of your message.
Ah, I see.
Of course, the message would be hidden in one nonsensical paragraph. But the man who received it would simply divide the whole shooting match into vertical columns, you know, one for each bell. Then he would run his pencil down the course of number five and read out the message.
But have you tried this method on the cryptogram?
Well, no, I haven't. I've only just thought of it. Now then, when Quentin came to Fenchurch and Paul, he asked for Paul Taylor. I suspect because Deacon had told him that Taylor Paul or Batty Thomas knew where the emeralds were.
Yes,
now,
indeed.
Now, that may refer to the cipher, of course. Come on, let's have at it. Let's try Kemp Treble Bob.
All right.
Well, we'll take Taylor Paul first. Now, she starts in the seventh place, H. Then eighth place, E. Back to seventh, S. To sixth, I. To fifth, T. H-E-S-I-T. Has it? Oh, well, it's pronounceable at any rate. Dodge up into sixth place again.
T.
T, indeed. Down to fifth.
E.
E. To fourth.
T.
To third. H. Hesiteth. Has... No, hang on. Hello, Padre. We have got two words anyhow. He sitteth. Perhaps he is the necklace. He sitteth.
He sitteth between.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's part of a verse from Psalm 99. He sitteth between the cherubim. Now, the next letter should be B. Be the earth never so quiet.
Well, it ain't a B. It's another T. No, there ain't a B anywhere. But wait a moment. Let's carry on. T, H, E, I. No, as you were. Look, it's the Isles.
The Isles may be glad thereof. Psalm 97.
Excellent. One more bit. A, S, T, H, E, R.
I have it, as the rivers in the south. Now, that's Psalm 126, verse 5.
Well done, Padre. He sitteth between the cherubim. The isles may be glad thereof, as the rivers in the south. But what the dickens is one to make of it?
If you please, Mrs. Venables, I should like to give my week's warning.
Good gracious, Emily, what on earth is the matter with you?
If you'll allow me to explain, Mrs. Venables.
I'm sure I ain't got no fault to find with you, and Rector has always been that kind. But if I'm to be spoken to so by Mr. Bunder, when I'm not his servant and never want to be, and it ain't no part of my duties, and anyway I was I to know, I did ought to have been told, and it ain't my fault, so I told Mr. Bunter.
Well, now, Bunter, what is all this trouble about?
I beg your pardon, madam. I fear that I forgot myself. But I've been in his lordship's service now for going on 15 years, counting my service under him in the war, and such a thing has never yet befallen me. In the sudden shock and the bitter mortification of my mind, I spoke with considerable heat. I assure you that it will not occur again.
But what is it all about?
That quart beer bottle, madam, standing there on the table, was found by his lordship in the church belfry, I believe. It was entrusted to me, and I intended photographing it this morning before sending it to Scotland Yard to be examined for fingerprints. Yesterday evening, it seems that this young woman entered the room during my absence, investigated the cupboard, and removed the bottle. Not content with removing it, she dusted it.
If you please, I was, I didn't know it was wanted. A nasty, dirty old thing. So I gives it a dust and...
And now the fingerprints have all gone. And what to say to his lordship, I do not know.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Oh, I don't know what to do.
You will understand my feelings, madam, when I think of his lordship waking to a new day and not knowing of the blow which is in store for him. He's rung twice, and he'll know by the delay that something of a calamitous nature has occurred.
Bunter?
My lord.
What the devil's happened to my tea? Oh, I beg your pardon, Mrs. Venables. Do excuse my language.
Oh.
And my bathrobe, what? I didn't know you were here.
Oh, Lord Peter, such a dreadful thing's happened. Your man is so terribly upset, and this silly girl, she meant well, of course, and it's all a mistake, but we've dusted all the fingerprints off your bottle.
I did it! I dusted it! I didn't know!
Bunter?
Yes, my lord.
Take up my tea and throw the bottle in the dustbin. What's done cannot be undone. Let it be a warning to you never to seek for happiness out of a bottle. Emily, if you cry any more, your young man won't know you on Sunday.
Yes, sir.
That will be all, Emily.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't worry about the bottle, Mrs. Venables. I always loathe the sight of it anyway. I beg you will not give another thought to it or to Emily either. She's a particularly nice girl, isn't she? What's her surname, by the way?
Holiday. She's some relation to Mary Throde. Though, of course, in this village, everybody is related to somebody or other. It comes of being such a small place. Though now they all have motor bicycles and the buses running twice a week, it isn't so bad. And there won't be so many unfortunate creatures like Potty Peak.
Just so, Mrs. Venables. Just so.
Beer, my lord?
No, thank you, not today. I'll have a bottle of Bass for a change.
Ah, very good, my lord. I think you'll find it in nice condition.
Condition is 9/10 of the bottle, what? And a lot depends, of course, upon the bottling. Who are your bottlers?
Greeks of Wallbeach. Ah. Very sound people they are, too. Look at that. Clear as a bell.
There's certainly nothing wrong with this. Your health. Won't you take something yourself?
Oh, thank you, my lord. You don't mind if I do. There we are. As nice a glass of Bass as you could wish to see.
Do you do much in the way of quart bottles?
Quarts? No, not much demand for quart bottles of beer. Of course, Will Thoday, he had quite a few while his brother Jim was at home.
Did he indeed? Excellent beer you serve here, landlord. Ah. Excellent beer.
My lord!
Yes, Superintendent, what can I do for you?
Oh, there you are, my lord. Hey, we got Cranton.
No.
Yes, my lord. They've run him to earth in a place in London. I heard from them this morning. I'm going up to interrogate him. Would you like to come?
Rather. Maybe our friend Cranton will be able to help with the cipher. I've cracked the code, by the way.
Have you? Oh, that's wonderful, my lord.
Yes, but I wish it were. It doesn't take us any further forward there, I'm afraid, but I am certain it's a clue to where the emeralds are hidden. And, incidentally, I think it was that Legros sent to his friend in England as a guarantee that he could lead him to the Wilbraham emeralds. And another thing. Here. Compare the paper on which the cipher is written with the paper on which Susan Legros sent the letter to her husband in England.
By Jove, my lord, they're the same. Might have come out the same packet.
I wonder if Cranton will be able to shed any light on that interesting coincidence.
Well, of course, if your lordship recognises me, that's done it. I'll have to come clean as the sheet set to the patent washer. Well, it's a fact that I was in Fenchurch, St. Paul, on New Year's Day, and a lovely place it is to start a happy new year in, I don't think. If you ask me, I think it's damned slack of you flatties not to have dug me out earlier. What we pay rates and taxes for, I don't know.
Don't waste your breath giving us lip, Cranton. When did you start growing that face fungus? In September? What was the idea?
Oh, I thought they'll never know Nobby Cranton, with his handsome features all hidden in black hair.
You had some game on, which started last September, eh? Anything to do with the Wilbraham emeralds?
Oh, to be frank, it was. Look here, I'll tell you the truth about that. I've never minded being put inside for what I've done, but it's offensive to a gentleman's feelings when his word isn't believed. I never had those emeralds, and you know it. If I had them, I wouldn't be living in a hole like this.
So you went to Fenchurch St. Paul to try and find them, I suppose, under the name of Stephen Driver.
That's right, I did. And why? Because I knew they must be there. That swine, you know who I mean.
Deacon, the servant.
Yeah, Deacon. He never got those emeralds from there, I'm sure of it. You pinched him too quick for that. He hid them somewhere, and I meant to get them, see? I meant to get them and then bring them along and show them to the police and make you take back what you'd said about me having had them. Pretty silly you'd have all looked, wouldn't you?
Indeed, that were the idea, were it? You're going to find the stuff and bring it along like a good little boy.
That's right.
What made you think you knew where to look for him, Cranton?
Something Deacon said once gave me an idea.
But he was a liar about that, too. He was so crooked, that man, you could have used his spine for a safety pin. It serves me right for having to do with menials. Deacon said to me in the dock, if you'll excuse me mentioning such a vulgar place, he said, Nobby, want to know where those shiners are? Ask Paul Taylor or Batty Thomas. But I found out there were no such people. Only some rubbish about bells, so I dismissed the matter from my mind and gave up any idea of finding them.
Why did you leave the village so soon?
I saw Deacon's wife. I was afraid she might remember me, might recognise me, despite the beard. I never expected to see her in the village.
She came back when she married a man named Thurday.
Married again? I didn't know that. Well, I'll be...
Did that woman have anything to do with the theft of the emeralds? Did she plan it with her husband, Deacon?
No. I pretty well take my oath. She knows nothing about them.
So you didn't investigate the matter of Batty Thomas and Paul Taylor any further? You didn't, for instance, visit the Belfry to see if the emeralds were hidden up there?
No, of course I didn't. Besides, the confounded place was always locked.
You tried it, then?
Eh? Well, I may just have laid my hand on the door, so to speak.
You never went up into the bell chamber?
Not me.
Then how do you account for the cipher that was found there?
Eh? I never saw it before. What is it?
You're lying. You have seen it. Jean Le Gros sent it to you, didn't he?
Eh, who's he? I've never heard of him. For God's sake, can't you leave me alone? Are you charging me with anything?
Not as yet.
Then you've got to take my answer.
Do you want to be charged?
With what? You can't charge me with stealing the emeralds all over again.
No, but we might charge you with the murder of Jean Le Gros.
Oh, no. No, no. That's a lie. I never killed him. I never killed anybody. I never.
Well, he recognised that paper all right.
Yes, produced quite a reaction, didn't it? He's frightened about something, all right.
He's frightened about the murder. It looks to me as though he did it. He admits he was there and that he ran away on the night the body was buried. If he didn't do it, who did? He could have got the key of the crypt from the sexton, all right, we know that.
So he could. But he was a stranger to the place. How did he know where the sexton kept his tools or where to find the bell rope? And where does Le Gros come into it? If Cranton knew where to find the emeralds, what was the sense of bringing Le Gros to England? And if he did, for some reason, need Le Gros and killed him to get the emeralds, where are the emeralds?
We'll search Cranton's house. I don't somehow think we'll find them, but if we do, then we can arrest Cranton for murder. I'm sure of that. If not, we'll be forced to release him.
Where thy treasure is, there shall thy heart be also. Yes, the heart of this crime, Super, is down at Fenchurch St. Paul. That is my prophecy. Care to have a bet on it?
Oh, but you see, you will find the same sort of arrangement in most of the Fen churches.
Mm-hmm.
At the Upwell Church near Wisbeach, for example, they put up a gallery in the south aisle. Very unfortunate. The cherubim are almost totally obscured.
Some more Yorkshire pudding for you, Lord Peter?
No, thank you, Mrs. Venables. Absolutely delicious, but I couldn't manage another morsel.
About 10 years ago, we took down the galleries in our church. Hideous, cumbersome things they were.
They made the church so dark, too. I always used to say it was a regular blind man's holiday underneath those galleries.
Do you mean the gallery in your church ran close to the cherubim in the south aisle?
Yes, and you see they ran right across the aisle windows, blocking the light and it...
He sitteth between the cherubim. The aisles may be glad thereof, as the rivers in the south.
The cryptograph?
Exactly.
Do you mean the emeralds are hidden between the cherubim in the south aisle?
Were hidden, perhaps. Where did the servants from the Thorpe's house sit before the gallery was taken down?
Why, they used the gallery. Good gracious. Then Deacon hid the emeralds somewhere in the gallery.
In the roof above the gallery, I suspect.
Well, we must hasten and... Oh, dear. Now, today is Sunday. Perhaps we could get a ladder tomorrow morning. We're still rather touchy about the fourth commandment here.
I don't think we need hurry, Padre. This will be purely for fun. By way of shutting the stable door after the steed has been stolen. Right, Brundle. Let's get the ladder up over here.
No. The servants used to sit further to the right.
Over here?
That's it.
Splendid. Right, now then. You hold the ladder steady, Brundle. That's a good fella.
Right, oh, my lord.
And up we go.
Do take care, Lord Peter.
Don't you worry about me. I'm all right. I say. Oh, need to give him the training for this. I do. Beautiful little work. All pig together. I say, this pig's rather loose. Pass me up the mallet, Blunder, would you, Mesmer, chap?
Here you are, my lord.
Hang on, I'm coming down.
Ah. Hey, careful now.
I'm afraid that ladder's rather old, Lord Peter.
Thank you. Right, so up we go again. Slowly does it. Right. Now then. Move in. One more go. There. Mallet coming down, Ludlow.
Got it, my lord.
Well done, well done. Now, let's get this peg out. Wriggle her gently. Looks like this was the hiding place, all right. And out she comes.
Bless my heart.
The emeralds. The emeralds, by God.
Indeed, 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 indeed.
And we were wrong, Blundell. We've been wrong from start to finish. Nobody found them. Nobody killed anyone for them. Nobody deciphered the cryptogram. We've got the emeralds, old lad, but we are wrong, wrong, wrong. Wrong and out of the hunt.
In that episode of The Nine Tailors, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Bunter, Peter Jones, the Reverend Theodore Venables, Philip Latham, Superintendent Blundell, Timothy Bateson, Nobby Cranton, Stephen Greif, Mrs. Venables, Noel Dyson, Emily, Jenny Twig, Potty Peak, Anthony Hyde, Donnington, John Church, narrator, John Westbrook. The Nine Tailors was adapted by Alistair Beaton from the book by Dorothy L. Sayers and was produced by Martin Fisher.